Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Pei Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Pei Hei, there is a Mishnah. Before we read the Mishnah, let's look at the outside margin where we provide topic headings and at times structural notes. Topic headings are entitled Nosei, meaning topic, and when a structural note appears, it will appear as the word with the word mivneh, meaning structure. The structural notes, when they appear, attempt to explain the role of the different geometric forms as they arrive per sugya. In this case, in our mivneh, in our nosei heading, we've written protim hakshurim lesodois, details related to fields shemehem mivien ho'imer ushnei lechem, fields from which the grains are produced for the purpose of the Omer and Shtei Alechem, these two public meal offerings. The Omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan, and the Shtei Alechem is brought as two loaves on Shavuos. The Mishnah. Ein Mevi'in, one is not to bring the Omer and the Shtei Alechem lo mi beis hazvolim, not from a field that relies on fertilizing, velo mi beis hashlochim, nor from an irrigation field, velo mi beis ha'ilon, nor from a field that's designed for the growth of trees, and there happens to be grains growing there as well. Vim hevi kosher, however, if one does bring from any of these areas, the korban will be acceptable. It's explained that the beis hazvolim are not acceptable, or in other words, are not preferred, because the fact that the field requires fertilizing reduces the quality of the grains had they been able to grow without the fertilizing. The Rashi Ksavyad offers two explanations. That which we just said is the second explanation. The first explanation is that if it's a field whose produce depends on fertilizing, there's the fear that you might not fertilize it enough, and the resultant produce will be of poor quality. The Beis HaElon, trees that grow in a field will sap away, a pun intended maybe, sap away some of the nutrients of the field would be needed for the grain development. But since it's a tree field, that's the primary purpose of that area. The grains that are growing there will be deprived of nutrients. Turning back to the Mishnah, Ketzad hu oise. How is the planting supposed to take place? Neira shona rishona. A field, we'll start with year one. A field is chosen and it's plowed. Neira, it's plowed and then left fallow. Ubishniya, in the second year, zora, it's planted. Kedem lepesach shivim yoim, 70 days before Pesach, it's planted with the grains. Vu oisus soilus meruba. If you follow this method, it will produce a great deal. The grains that grow will, the field that's treated that way will produce a great deal of flour. Ketzad boidek hagizbar. How does the gizbar, he is the representative of the Beis HaMikdash, how does he check the soilus to know that it's been sifted sufficiently? Machnis yodoi l'soicho. He sticks his hand into the sifted soles. Ola bo avak. If there is avak, literally is dust, but it's a powdery substance that we would call fine flour. The menachos do not come from fine flour; they come from the soles part of the product. And therefore, if there's fine flour that is included in this, then psula ad shinafena. It's unfit until it experiences further sifting. And we've learned in previous sugyas that one of the types of sifters, in fact, the small hold sifter, is designed to sift away the powdery substance, leaving behind the more granular soles, which is what's used for the menachas. So if you find a presence of a kemach, of this powdery flour, in the soles, the granular section, you will subject it to an additional sifting using a very small hold sifter, which will allow the undesirable kemach part to fall through. The avak that's referred to in the Mishnah will fall through the holes, and you will retain the desired soles, more larger granular substance. V'im hislia psula. If the produce is wormy, so it's unacceptable. And of course, if the Mishnah was talking about the grains, so if the grains are wormy, it will be unacceptable. Turning now to the Gemara, but before we learn the Gemara, there's a nosei, a topic heading that accompanies this section. Achrei shechorash hasodeh, shona rishona. The topic heading explains the issue here, that after the field has been plowed the first year, we mentioned in the Mishnah, a field is chosen, it's plowed up, left fallow that first year. Ha'im yesh tzorech lachsur v'lachrush shona shniya lifnei azriya. Is there a necessity of plowing the field a second time the second year before the planting? The Mishnah didn't mention it. The Mishnah did mention a plowing during the first year and a planting during the second year. The question is the Mishnah to be taken literally, that's all that's done, or is there an understood second plowing during the second year before the planting? Ketzad hu oise, our Gemara now says, shona rishona v'chule, etc. Ibaya laho, hechi ko'omar. The Gemara asks, how are we to understand the Mishnah? And the structure of this question, as is very often the case when you have this type of opening, it's aleph, and then you'll see a little bit further on the line, oi dilma, which is squiggle underline, indicating a transition, bays meaning the second side of the analysis. So the first side of the analysis is neiro shana rishona ushnia neiro vazora, that the Mishnah is to be understood thusly, plowing first year, and second year a plowing, and then a subsequent planting. So that would indicate that there is a plowing during the second year. Oy dilma, or maybe the Mishnah is to be taken quite literally, neiro shana rishona, a plowing during the first year, ushnia zora below you neiro. The second year, there's a planting without a plowing beforehand. Toshma. The Gemara introduces a Tanaic source that will be an attempt to answer this question. Disanya, and you can see it's a Tanaic source by virtue of the fact that the upcoming section is in a frame. In our Gemara marking system, Tanaic sources are placed in frames. Omar Rav Yossi, Af chiti karzayim ukvar achim. Rav Yossi says that even these wheat that comes from karzayim, and from these are place names, and kvar achim, another place, ilmolei smuchas Yerushalayim, if they were close to Yerushalayim, hayu mevi'in mehen, we would bring the grains from that, from those locations, if they had been close to Yerushalayim. The fisha'ein mevi'in es oimer elo min hasodos hamudromos. The acceptability of these places apparently is because the omer is to be brought from fields that are southerly located in the south. Veha menunorois lekach, and that they've been plowed up for the purpose of omer production. Now, the significance of a southerly field is shebohen chamo zirachas umehen chamo shokas, because the sun is positioned primarily in the southern hemisphere, and therefore fields located in a southerly position will receive a great deal of sunshine, and the sunshine helps to increase the quality of the grain. Ketzad oiseh, how is the field to be prepared? Neiroshona rishona, a plowing during the first year, ushnia choresh vishona, and the second year of plowing and a second plowing, vizora. This section is dashed, underlined, because it's of significance for our sugya. The second year, there's a, what it says in this brisa, there is a second plowing, in fact, a double plowing during the second year, vizora, and then planted, kodem lepesach shivim yom, 70 days before Pesach. Kedei shetehei smucha lechama. The choice of that time for the planting enables the grains to benefit from the smucha lechama, means close to the season in which the sun is shining at full strength. V'oise kone zeres v'shibolus zorsayim. The grains that will result will be the kone, is the stalk of the grain, will be a zeres. A zeres is an amount, a size. And the shibolus will be twice as much. The shibolus is the part of the grain, the top of the stalk that contains the grains, the seeds, the wheat seeds or wheat grains. That's a very impressive type of development, where the stalk is actually in the minority of the height of the resultant grain. For kotzer, and now there's a list of procedures that follow from the point that the grain is fully developed and harvested, and all of these are following procedures that are done till you get to the point that it's made into flour. So it's v'kotzer, there's harvesting, ma'amer, it's piled up, v'dosh, it's threshed, v'zora u'borer, these are different procedures of separating the chaff from the kernels. The tochein, it's ground up, umarakeid, and sifted. Umevi eitzel gizbor, it's then brought, the sifted flour, after we've grounded and sifted it, it's brought now to the gizbor, the one in charge. The gizbor machnis yodu l'soicha, and the gizbor puts his hand into it, into the flour. Imolse bo avak, if his hand comes out with powdery flour clinging to it, Omer lo, then he instructs, Chazor v'nape osa shnia. You must go again and sift it once more. Mishum Rabbi Noson Amru, in the name of Rabbi Noson, it was explained, Gizbor soch yodu shemen, the Gizbor smears his hand with oil, umachnis l'soicha, ad shemale kol avka. By the hand being smeared with oil, the powdery flour will cling to it, so he removes the floury section of the soles through inserting his arm that's coated with oil again and again until all of the flour is removed. Apparently a procedure in place of a re-sifting. Kotoni mihas, it however says in this source, and this is a quote from the source, there's a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, enabling you to spot the previous arrow, and you'll see where this quote comes from. It says here, Choresh v'shoina, that in the second year there is another plowing. So that if the original question was, after the first year plowing, is there a plowing during the second year? The answer would be, yes, this source indicates thusly. So, with that understanding, that's how we are to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah that says there's a plowing the first year, then there is a plowing the second year, and then a planting. That's how to understand the Mishnah. With that understanding of the Mishnah, though, there's a sort of boomerang effect here, that now the Brisa actually represents a problem. In other words, the same Brisa that we were using to solve the understanding of the Mishnah now presents a problem. The Mishnah mentioned nothing about the plowing during the second year. So as a result of this, we're saying that we are to assume that there is a plowing during the second year. But now, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, there is no way that we could understand the Mishnah as saying that the second year requires two plowings. At best, we can insert a singular plowing for the second year before the planting. But to suggest that the Mishnah would be talking about more than one plowing, that would be going much too far. However, the Braisa mentions explicitly that during the second year, there is a double plowing. So the Gemara raises this problem. Ula Tameich, according to you that are trying to clarify the Mishnah from this Braisa, there's a problem now. Masnisen lo chatoni shayna. The Mishnah makes no reference to a double plowing during the second year. Braisa chatoni shayna. But the Braisa, when speaking about the second year, the Braisa mentions a double plowing. So how can we account for two approaches to the second year? Is there a need for a double plowing or not? The Gemara says, "Ha lo kashya." This particular point doesn't present a difficulty. Kan be'avuda, kan b'shein avuda. If you have a field that during the first year was plowed, there is no need during the second year to do a double plowing. However, if you have a situation where the field was not plowed in the first year, then there will be a necessity of doing a double plowing, getting it ready for the planting during that second year. My havi alo. The Gemara wants to know, well, what's the bottom line as far as the second year is concerned? Can we rely on the answers we've given till now or not? So the Gemara wants to know, bottom line, what's the din with regard to the second year and a need for plowing? Toshma, the Gemara will cite a rather short source, and the goal of this citation is to show that in fact there is no plowing during the second year. Assuming there was a plowing of the field during the first year, where we said it's plowed up, left fallow, when you come to the second year, you go right ahead to the planting. And how do we see this? So we read the following source, Disanya, near Chetzya, Vizorea Chetzya, near Chetzya, Vizorea Chetzya. This source is quite brief. So what we should do is we'll glance into the Rashi, the Ksav Yad, and notice he says near Chetzya, Chetzya Deshona Rishona, Chor Shokula, the first year, the entire field is plowed up. And after the entire field is plowed up, half of it is planted, Uminia Chetzya near, and the other half is left simply plowed. It's left fallow after having been plowed. V'chein B'shona Shnia, Choresh Kula, V'zorea Hachetzi Shelo Zora Eshtakeid. V'Hachetzi Shezora Eshtakeid, Miniach near, B'chol Shona, Zorea near, Shel Eshtakeid. Every year, you plant that which was plowed last year. Uposhit, and we conclude the Ein Neiro Elopam Achas. And we conclude that there's in the planting cycle, there's only one plowing that's needed. Ulahochi Ein Zora Kulak Achas, and for the following reason, we don't plant the entire field. Shein derech b'nei odom l'zroak hakoseim shona achar shona. It's not normal. It's not the way of people to plant entire fields year after year. M'nei shematishin es hasodos. It saps up all of the nutrients. L'kach zora l'chatzoim u'marbim peiros b'chol shona. Therefore, this procedure is followed so that you have every given year, you have half of the field is planted, and the other half is plowed up, and the next year, the field that in the previous year was plowed is now planted, and the section that had been planted is now plowed, so that you can see year by year, the plowing exists on the section that you plan to plant. The plowing takes place the previous year. This following year, you plant that section. The next year, you will plow up that section, and on and on. With that in mind, then, you see that the year of the planting, that particular section that you're planting, does not require an additional plowing. The plowing was taken care of the year before. Before continuing in the Gemara, we just glance at the side. We have our No Say topic heading. Ein Mevien Es HaOmer Elo Misodos HaMedromos Beretz Yisrael. The Omer is to be brought from fields located in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Mevien Es HaOmer Elo Min HaSodos HaMedromos. From the word Mudromos has as its root the word Dorom, the southern part, Sheberet Israel. Why? Shebohen Chamo Zayrachas, Umehen Chamo Shokas. Because the southern part of Eretz Israel will receive a great deal of sunlight. The sun rises in the southeastern part of the hemisphere. It takes a course over the southern hemisphere and then sets in the southwestern part of the hemisphere. So the bulk of the sunshine is over the southerly part of the land. Tanyo Nami Hochi. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Abashol Omer. Omer Hoya Bo Mibikas Beis Makle. The Omer would come from that place. Bikas Beis Makle. Kibas Sholosh So'in Hoysa. The field was about 3 saw in size, and they grew in it all that they needed for the Omer. The Soda Mudremes Hoysa. And this was a southerly field. Ubo Chamo Zerachas, Umimeno Chamo Shokas. And at that part of the geography, the sun rose and set, taking its entire course of travel, shining with intensity on that field, on that section. Nir Chetzio Vezorei Chetzio, Nir Chetzio Vezorei Chetzio. As we saw before, half of the field is plowed up, the other half of the field is planted. Now, when we speak about the half of the field being planted, we realize that that part of the field had been plowed up the year before. And likewise, the next year, the Nir Chetzio, the part that had been planted is now plowed up, and Vezorei Chetzio, the part that in the previous year had been plowed, is now planted. Rav Chilkiah bar Tuvi havi leh karna da'ara. Rav Chilkiah had a section of land. Karna literally is a corner of land or a section of land, and he treated it like this. He treated it like we are taught with regard to the production of grains for the Omer. Nir chetzio vezorei chetzio, nir chetzio vezorei chetzio, the ovda al chad trei, and it produced twice as much as could very well be as other fields or as is expected. In other words, it's the Gemara is pointing out how by following this sound agricultural or cultivational advice, the field will yield a fruitful bounty. Umazvin lehu lechiti lesmido, and he sold his wheat for the production of sola. Sola is being the most desirable part of the flour production. So not only did he produce a great deal as far as quantity, but also the quality was of a high level. Vim hislia psula. We said if the grains become wormy, so it's unacceptable. Tanu rabbanan, soilus shislia ruba psula. The flour that rove of which the majority of which is wormy, psula, is unacceptable. V'chitin shisliu ruban psulos, and the grains, of course we're talking before it's ground up at the flour, grains that became wormy, if the majority became wormy, psulos. Boy Rabbi Yirmiyah analyzes the issue of the grain wormy situation. Baroiv chita oi baroiv se'ah. In order for it to be rendered puzzle, does that mean that rove of each grain is wormy, or does it mean rove of the measure is wormy? In other words, if you say rove of each grain, so that's pretty clear why it's unacceptable. Each grain is wormy. The other side of this analysis is maybe rove, even if it's rove saw, that means you have a box full or a barrel full of grain, a saw in quantity, and over 50% of the saw is wormy. The minority of it is not wormy. So according to this, even if that was the case, since the minority of it is not wormy, but it's part of a measure, most of which was wormy, that too is unfit. Teku, this remains unresolved. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a marking, a diamond with a double underline. We've used this marking over here to highlight the fact that Rava asks the same question in different contexts. And you can see on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, the diamond features Boi Rava, and the double underline emphasizes the expression Hikdish, he sanctified, he dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash Chitim O Eitzim Metulaim, whether it be wheat or wood. Wood is used on the Mizbeach. The wood, in fact, is termed a Korban. There's something called a Korban Eitzim. So one offered either wormy grain or wormy wood. That's Eitzim Metulaim. Mao Shiyuke Mishum Balmum. Does he deserve lashes for the offense of sanctifying a Balmum? There's a prohibition of dedicating an animal sacrifice where the animal is a Balmum, is a blemished creature. The question here is do we say that just like over there, there is a violation of a negative command which warrants lashing, that as with regard to dedicating an animal that's blemished, do we view wormed wheat or wormed wood as blemished? And if that be the case, do we say that it's considered like you dedicated an animal? Let's turn to the Gemara. Boi Rava. Hikdishan, he was makdish, he dedicated or dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash or sanctified wormy grain for Menachas. Wormy grains for Menachas. Mahu shiyuke alei mishum balmum. Does he warrant or deserve receiving lashes because of the prohibition of dedicating a blemished sacrifice? Two sides of the question. You can see the Aleph, and then there will be Odoma, squiggle underline, Beis. So do you say, kevan de posil kebal mumda? I mean, since it's unfit, we said already earlier that if im hisli apsula, so since if it's posil, it's viewed as a balmum, and there would be malchus, oidilma, ein balmum elo bevehema. Or do you say that the prohibition under the heading balmum, which is a very specific label, that applies only to animal dedications? Teku, this remains unresolved. Tanan Hossam, we have a Tanaic source that deals with the issue of wood offerings. Kol Eitz Shinimsa Boi Teilas Posul Legabi Mizbeach. Wood in which there was found worms is unfit for using as fuel on the Mizbeach. Omar Shmuel Loishanu Elo Lach. The teaching of wood being posul in Mizbeach as a result of worminess is true only if the wood is damp, namely it's not dried out. Avol yovesh, if you have a dry wood and you notice worms on it, goro v'kosher, all you have to do is scrape off the wood and it's kosher, it's acceptable. Boi rova higdisho mahu shilkel olov mishu balmum. Let us say someone sanctified wood for the mizbeach that happened to be wormy. Is he deserving of malchus, of lashings, because of dedicating a blemished item? Kevon de posel kebamul dummy. On the one hand, do we say, since wormy wood is unacceptable, it's like a balmum, it's like a blemished sacrifice, and that would warrant lashing? Oy duma ein balmum elo bevehema. Or do we say that the prohibition of dedicating balmum is something that's specific to animal offerings? Teku, this remains unresolved. The Mishnah now turns its attention to the issue of the oil. The Nosei topic heading that we have in the outside margin, Zesim L'Shemen. We're going to be dealing with the olives fit for the production of oil. In Menachos, of course, in addition to the flour, many, many Menachos add oil as part of them. Tekoa. Tekoa is the name of a place. Alpha L'Shemen. Alpha is like the letter Aleph, which is equal to 1, is first place, first top location for Shemen. So Shemen from Tekoa is the most desirable. Abashol Omer, Shni Ola, in second position is Regev, Be'ever Hayardein. Abashol says that a second best location for oil production are from the olives that are grown in Regev, which is on the eastern side of the Jordan River. Kol ha'arotzus hoyu ksheros, elo mikan hoyu mevien. All the different sections of Eretz Yisrael are acceptable for oil production, but these are itemized, these are pointed out, specified because they brought from these locations. Ein mevien lo mi beis hazvolim, velo mi beis hashlochim. As we saw in the previous mission with regard to the grains, here too one is not to bring from olives that grow in areas that need fertilizing, nor those areas that need irrigation. Velo min ma shenizra beinehem. And one is not to bring oil from trees between whom are planted other plants. So that we're focusing on an olive grove that has no other vegetation growing between the trees. That other vegetation will sap away the nutrients, depriving the olives from their maximum nutritional benefit. The imhevi kosher, if one brought from these locations that we just said not to bring from, it nevertheless is acceptable. Ein mevien an pakten. The Gemara will deal with defining that. So one is not to bring an pakten, the imhevi kosher. But if one does bring an pakten, it will be okay. It's obvious that an pakten is some form of that which comes from olive production. Ein mevien min hagagrin shenoshu b'mayim. One is not to bring from olives that were left to soak in water. Velo min hakvashim, nor for olives that were pickled or preserved. Velo min hashlukim, nor from boiled ones. V'im hevi pasul. If one produces oil from any of these, then that will be unacceptable. The Gemara opens up with a pasuk that features Yoav, who was a general in David HaMelech's army. And it says as follows, Vayishlach Yoav Tekoya, Vayikach Misham Isho Chachoma. Yoav sent after a woman to Tekoa. He sought out a woman from Tekoa. And she was summoned. She happened to be a very smart woman. The Gemara wants to know, what's the relationship between the fact that he sent for this smart woman specifically to Tekoa? Tekoa being the name of a place. My Shna Tekoa, what's unique or special about Tekoa? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mitoch Shirigilin B'Shemen Zayas Chochmo Mitzuyo Behen. Because they consume on a regular basis olive oil. Olive oil improves wisdom, improves the capacity for attaining wisdom. And therefore, she was sought out from that location. Before going ahead in the Gemara, we have another topic heading. Let's glance at what we've included there. The Nosei says, Maisa, there's an incident reported in this Gemara. The incident will take up the entire Tanaic source that follows. It's a rather long framed section. And in this Maisa Be'echot Shehoya Nira Ke'oni, we'll see a person who appeared to be an impoverished individual, and yet Shemocha Kamus Atsumo Shel Shemen. He had a tremendous, a vast amount of olive oil that he was able to sell, as will be revealed in the story. So, in at the end of this particular section, the Gemara will point out that there are those kinds of people that may appear as impoverished, but they're far from it. Now, the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, V'tovil B'Shemen Ragloi. This is a posuk that was stated by Moshe Rabbeinu when he was blessing the tribe of Osher. And the posuk says there will be such a plenty of oil that he'll be able to immerse his feet in bowls of olive oil. Ze chelko shel Osher. This is a reference to the portion of Osher, Shemoshech Shemen Kimayon, that oil flows there like a stream. Omru, Pam achas nitzucholohen anshe lutkio b'shemen. Once upon a time, there was a need for oil on the part of the people from Lutkia. In other words, the Lutkia population needed oil. Minu lohem fumustus echad. They appointed an emissary, a shaliach, who happened to be a Gentile, to acquire for them oil. Omru loi, they said to him, lech v'havei lanu shemen b'mea ribo. Mea ribo is an amount of money. It's a vast amount of money. So bring us Mea Rebo. Rebo is a unit of 10,000. So this is 100 times 10,000, whatever unit of money is mentioned here, but whatever it is. For our purposes, it means a vast amount. Holach Yerushalayim, this Fulmustus, this Gentile, went to Yerushalayim in his search of the oil. Amru lo, lech letzur, go to Tzur. Holach letzur, he went there. Amru lo, lech legush cholav, go to that place. Holach legush cholav, he went to this location, Gush Cholav, which was in the province or in the tribe of Asher. Amru lo, lech etzel ploni, lesoda haloz, go to so and so in such and such field. There's a Girsa of the ads here. Holach, he went. Umotsoi shehoya urzek tachazesof. He went to that field and found the person he was to seek out was urzek. He was digging a ditch around his olive trees. He was helping to aerate the soil by digging up the land around each tree. Do you have mea ribo worth of oil that I need? So the man who appeared as a worker, he said, wait until I finish my work. He waited. After the man working on the trees finished his job, Hifshu Kelev Lachorov, he slung his vessels over his back. And as he was leaving the field, he was throwing stones off the path. He was clearing the pathway of stones. The Rashi points out that we're given the impression of a mere worker, of a poor worker. What's being described here is characteristic of such individuals, slinging the vessels over one's back and then walking out of the field. Omar lo, yesh lecha shemen b'mea ribo. The Omar lo is could possibly mean that this goy said to himself. He said in wonderment that can this guy possibly have that amount of oil? This guy looks like an impoverished worker. How in the world is he someone that's going to provide me with this vast amount of oil? Kimeduma ani. It appears to me sheschok sochaku bo hayehudim, that the Jews are making a joke out of me. In other words, the Jews sent me to this individual who obviously has nothing, and to place a request from him of such a vast amount. Well, Kevon Shigil Iroi, when this worker got to his town, he got home, Hotsio lo shivchoso kumkumum shel chamin. She produced for him a kettle of warm or hot water. Verochatz bo yodo v'raglov, and he washed his hands and feet. Hotsia loy seifel shel zahav. She also brought out a basin made of gold. Malea shemen, full of oil. V'taval bo yodo v'raglov, and he dipped, or he immersed his hands and feet in this oil, in the golden bowl. L'kayim mashinemar, to fulfill that which it says in the pasuk, v'toivel v'shemen ragloi, and he will immerse his feet in oil. La'achar she'ochlu v'shasu, after they dined, after they ate and drank, modad lo shemen b'mea ribo, this man who obviously is no impoverished individual, measured out for him, provided for him that amount of oil. Shemen, oil, the mea ribo, in exchange for that amount of money. Omar lo, the seller, says, klum atat zorach liyosu, do you possibly need any more? Omar loy, hein, elo she'ein li domim. Yes, I in fact do need more, but I don't have the cash. I don't have it with me. Omar lo, so the vendor said, im ato roitze likach, kach, if you want, listen, I'll provide for you this additional 18 ribo worth of oil. Vani eilech imcha betol domov. I will then go with you to your town where you have the money or you have access to funds, and I'll collect my pay over there by your town. Modad loy shemen b'shmoynos ribo. He measured out an additional 18 ribo worth of oil. Omru, it was then told, it was reported, Lohiniach oisoi ho'ish, this man, this vendor, left no animal or beast of burden unhired, lo sus velo pered velo gomo velo chomor, not a horse, nor a mule, nor a camel, nor a donkey in all of the land of Israel, shelo sochro, that he didn't hire. These are the amount of oil that we're describing here, which would be 118 webo worth of oil, was a vast amount of oil, requiring all of the means of transportation to ship it to where this, to Lutkia, which we saw before, is where they needed the oil. Kevon Shigil, you know, when the Pumustus, this emissary, this Gentile, came to back to his town, Yotsu Anshi Ulukalso, the citizenry went out to greet him, to praise him. Job well done. Omer Lahem, so the Pumustus said, Lo li kalsuni, I'm not the one deserving of praise, Elo lezeh sheboimi, rather, to this man, this guy that came with me, Shemodat li shemen b'mea ribo, who measured out the mea ribo worth of oil, the harei noishebi b'shmoina esrei ribo, and in fact, he has a claim on an additional 18 ribo that he sold to me. L'kaye mashenemar, this scenario fulfills that which you see in the pasuk in Mishle, yesh misasher v'ein kol. There are those that give the impression of being wealthy and really have nothing. Misroshesh v'hoin rav. And there are those that appear impoverished and yet they are very, very wealthy. How telling this pasuk is, and how common we see this, in fact, that people that appear to have appear to live a lifestyle of wealth and pomp, and yet all of it is theirs only on credit, and in fact they are very deeply in debt, so that they appear to be wealthy but are far from it. And the contrary is also the case, those people who live a very humble, simple lifestyle, and yet often at the point of their demise, one then discovers that they had vast fortunes. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.